Tonight Talk is coming right up this week. Linda Stansberry is our host. Please give us a call at 826-4805 or at 1-800-640-5911 for our toll-free line. And as well, our text messaging line at 492-KHSU. Now over to Linda.
Hi, good evening. My name is Linda Stansberry. I am your host on Thursday Night Talk, and I'm also a staff writer with the North Coast Journal. I'm joined tonight by two fellow reporters, Ryan Burns of the Lost Coast Outpost. How you doing, Ryan?
Good, Linda. Thanks.
Awesome. And then also on the line is Dan Squire with KINS. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great, Linda. Good evening, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us here tonight. So we're basically tonight going to be talking a little bit about media literacy, how to hold your news sources accountable, what it actually takes to write a story and report on local events, kind of go into the sausage making of journalism. And I wanted to start out just by talking a little bit about our experience. I personally did not go to journalism school, or as some people say, J school.
Nor did I, in fact.
Oh, really? What about you, Dan?
No, I did not.
Oh, my gosh.
Bunch of amateurs here.
Yes, it is amateur hour. All right. Well, Ryan, how long have you been reporting on local news?
About almost 10 years now. I was an English major here at HSU, and when I graduated, I started doing some freelance writing for local publications, including the Arcata Eye and the Times Standard. And then I eventually got hired as a copy editor at the Times Standard and did that for about a year and a half before moving to the other side of the newsroom to be a business reporter. And after being at the Times Standard for about 2 years, I got hired at the North Coast Journal, and I was there for about 5 years, and moved over to the Lost Coast Outpost, where I've been for a little over 3 years now.
What about you, Dan?
I came up here in 2003. I was hired as a sports writer at the Times Standard, and that's how I ended up in the newspaper business. And in 2006, things changed. And I was hired as to do the radio news at KINS for Eureka Broadcasting, and I've been there ever since. In fact, Ryan came into the Times Standard just after I had left. I was colleagues with Heather Shelton and Thaddeus Greenson and John Driscoll, Chris Durant during my time there. But I came straight from sports writing into news.
Excellent. And I myself was a creative writing major. I interned at the Arcata Eye when I was 17 and stayed away from journalism for another 10 years until I was hired at the North Coast Journal full-time in 2015. And my editor at the time said that it was easy to train a good writer to be a journalist than to train a journalist to be a good writer, and has not said he regrets that decision, but we'll see.
That's Thaddeus Greenson.
That's
been
all day long.
Yeah, Dan and I both worked with Thad at the Times Standard.
Yep.
Do you guys ever feel like you missed out by not attending journalism school and taking all those classes on how to file, like, a Public Record Act request and all that stuff? Because sometimes I honestly do.
Not too much, because I think Thad was right that I got most of that training when I was on the job, and I did take a couple of media classes when I was at HSU, so I got some of that. But yeah, I think, you know, submitting a Public Records Act request is something you can learn in a day. In fact, you don't even have to be a journalist to do that. Anybody can file one, and most of the tricks of the trade you can pick up from your colleagues, I think.
What do you think, Dan?
I stand as a storyteller. I came to the business as a storyteller. There's one advantage to sports that carries over from print into the new digital media area and that era, and that is the story is there to be told. So I came in with that willingness and that ability to say I want to talk about the things that I've just seen and describe them to you and tell you what just happened. So I'm not necessarily what you would call a traditional journalist in this sense. My news is very basic. You guys listen to my news. You know exactly what we're talking. This is headline news on the radio. It's very straight reporting. So the varying degrees of what we consider journalism and those sorts of things, that's always fun and good. But we all do the same thing. This is what happened. This is what we can confirm, and we're telling you this is what we have.
So you're talking about with Straightforward News, you're doing the who, what, why, when, where, et cetera?
Yes.
Okay.
The mediums are different now, and Ryan is right there at the front edge with Lost Coast Outpost. That's a strictly digital media, online. You're still working in the print medium, and I'm still working in radio, and those are the two old traditional ones. And yet the mix is still there, but the goal in the end is to get across the information. How we do it is different.
Well, that's true, and I think in a way, Ryan and I, because we both write long form stories, we do have an advantage because it's easier for us to convey a narrative to some news where you're doing straightforward reporting. It might be a little shorter and in a little less depth. Do you miss that?
Well, it's not that I miss it so much. The challenge is still there. It's just in a. It's the jazz is a little different. That sound is a little different. The way you do it is a little different. It's not so much missing it, but there is one of the nice things that we do have is Talk Shop at KINS. And when Brian gets to talking with our local officials and local elected folks, that's a chance for at least the news department to be able to say, here's an expanded sound. You can listen to that. Here's, it's more than just, 3.5 minutes of headline news. So we have that advantage, but it is different, but I don't necessarily miss it. The challenge is different.
Well, as long as we're talking about the difference in mediums, I want to say that the rise of social media in the past 10, 15 years, and especially in the last 5 years, has really, I think, has contributed to a loss of media literacy with the general public, and also with kind of a dilution of journalistic integrity. And I would really like to ask you guys, how tired are you of hearing the term fake news being misused?
Pretty tired. It's pretty meaningless now as a term. I mean, originally this came up during the election to as a very specific term to mean news that was produced deliberately to mislead. The famous example was the story claiming that the Pope had endorsed Trump for president. That's fake news. There's not a shred of it that's true. But of course now Trump himself has adopted it, as have many of his supporters, to essentially mean any news they don't care for, any news they don't like. CNN, the New York Times have gotten the brunt of Trump's ire, and they just, he calls them fake news as a stand-in for their being mean to me. And I think it's lazy criticism. I think fake news is a real problem, as is sensationalism and clickbait, but those phrases are used, those terms are used so freely that they're essentially meaningless at this point.
I agree. They seem to be used pretty interchangeably. So for the purpose of definition, Dan, how would you help someone define fake news?
I'm not even sure I can. We are dealing with an environment, and I'm a few years older than you guys, but we're of similar eras. You guys have operated much more exclusively inside a digital media era than I have. And the fake news thing is that there, in the end, there are millions and millions more people with the ability to express what they find, what they think is reporting. And so, is it fake news? We have a general standard that we abide by, that the trust in the person who is doing the reporting is reporting as accurately as they can. I'm not sure if the fake news thing is anything other than the chorus, or the folks in the audience can now join the chorus and scream at the top of their lungs saying, well, I thought it was this instead of that. So Ryan is right on. There is the idea that there is fake news out there that somehow is harming the nation or the world. Fake news is there, but I mean, you either know it or you don't. Is it pornography? That old adage? I don't know.
Well, it gets confusing, right? Because especially on social media, there's such a barrage of information that's already pre-chosen by social media platforms to reflect our own beliefs, according to who our social groups are. So some of the news you're getting might be completely false. It might be incorrect. It may not be news at all. Some of it may be just poorly reported and biased. And I think that for the purposes of helping our listeners better understand what is good reporting and what is not, like, I wanted to get a little bit into the sausage making of what it actually takes to write and produce a good story, because when I hear something called fake news just because someone disagrees with it, it kind of raises my hackles a little bit, because I think that all three of us go through a really rigorous process when we're producing a story, and
it's a cop-out. You're right. Mm-hmm. It is an easy way to say, you know what, I don't want to look at that too much more or in a different way, or it's easy enough for me to just brush that aside. And that also comes with as many voices there are now out there throwing out as much information as they can. We are still able to discern that there are ways and the manner in which you guys do your job, the way you research your stories and interview your sources, the way you present it, that is still recognizable, even in the digital, all of that noise in the digital world, I still think it is there. Is it impacting us? Yes, because so much of it is available. But I still think, I think you guys will agree a little bit, that you can still recognize when someone has put together a well-sourced story as opposed to something that is just a distraction.
I think that's certainly true of Linda and me and everyone else I know who works in local media. I don't think that's true of a lot of the American readership or listenership. I think there's a demonstrable evidence that people have a hard time distinguishing from facts and well-sourced reporting. And, you know, as the fake story about the Pope endorsing Trump demonstrates, just straight up lies. And even if we're not talking about deliberate straight out lies, there are news sources that are adept at, you know, twisting facts to meet an agenda. And whether that's, you know, Fox News or, you know, you name your source on that, but it's people end up seeking out the news that validates what they already think, and that's problematic. You know, I think the promise of the internet was that we would have, you know, all the encyclopedia of knowledge at our fingertips, and we could, you know, seek out any information we wanted at any point, but in practice, it's a lot more common for people to, as you said, Linda, be in their own sort of echo chambers and seek out information that makes them feel correct.
That's true. Hey, I just want to throw it out to our listeners that you are listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU, and we welcome your calls. That phone number is 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. You can also text us at 492-KHSU. And I'm Linda Stansberry. Tonight we're talking about media literacy with Ryan Burns, the Lost Coast Outpost, and Dan Squire of KINS. So circling back to what it takes to produce a really thorough story, I brought an example for you guys that I think is really funny, and I'm just going to go through this, and I want you to tell me the problems with the story.
So, ooh, an exam.
If you were an editor, all right. Yeah. Sorry, Dan. I didn't tell you about the exam portion.
Pop quiz.
Pop quiz. All right. So if you were an editor, tell me about the problems in this story, starting with the headline. Clowns trying to lure children into woods, locals in South Carolina say.
I remember the clown scare, the great clown scare of 2016.
Dan. All right. So it starts like this. Officials in Greenville County say they've found no evidence to support the sightings, but police patrols are being stepped up.
So, well, at least the lead sentence discloses the fact that it's a non-story, right?
Right. Okay, so if I turn this into my editor, just giving our listeners an idea, if I turn this into into my editor and the first sentence was, yeah, officials say there's nothing going on here, I think he'd throw it up my head, personally.
Right.
Right? So, okay, so second line, residents in nearby homes say they saw the clowns trying to attract children.
Wow, that's hearsay, and I can't stop laughing because it's about clowns.
First of all, how are they dressed? So I want to know if this is a roadside attraction or if they're dancing. But even beyond that, if you're going to go through each and every one of these sentences, at one point, we're going to all go according to whom?
Right. That sentence is so nondescript, and so
it's a nothing. There's nothing there. Now, it you can write whatever you want. You can publish whatever you wish. But if the goal is to get across accurate information, we have to know. And Ryan talked about this just a minute ago. We have to be able to trust your sources, and we can be very compartmentalized when that happens, when people want to be able to confirm their own biases. And that's a common thing. So going through each sentence and saying this story is absurd, that's great, because at one point we're all going to say who said this and why, and how can we confirm that? Do we have them on record? Can we quote them? Can we get them to say, yes, this is what I said, this is what I saw, boom.
Right. So just running through this really quickly, here are their sources: children, a press release, a resident who they don't name or source, who said she saw a clown at like 3 o'clock in the morning that didn't talk to her, and then another woman who they don't name, and a building manager who they don't name. But here, okay, so guys, this is what kills me. Guess where I found this story? Guess where this came up in August 2016? It was on the BBC.
Wow.
The BBC website, which is like my go-to source for international news. It was on the front page.
You know, this, I hate to keep coming back to Trump, but he recently brought up the importance of naming your sources. And he was advocating for a position that the New York Times and all other major media outlets should never use anonymous sources.
Mm-hmm.
This on the same day that he made some of his own staffers available on the condition that they remain anonymous. But I think there has to be a good journalistic reason to keep your source anonymous. And if they aren't at least quoting the neighbors who saw three dozen clowns emerge from one tiny car, then it's a red flag.
Why do they have to be clowns in a car? Couldn't it be a circus, Ryan?
It could. I was just running with the theme, Dan.
See, this predisposed bias you have. Well, let's circle back to this. We do have a call on the line from John in Petrolia. How you doing, John?
I'm doing very well, Linda. How are you?
I'm excellent. Nice to hear your voice.
So anyway, I was calling with first a comment and then a kind of line of questions for the, for you and your colleagues there, about how you pursue news from about local agencies. The comment is that when I was a boy, we had McCarthyism, and there was lots of fake news there, so fake news is nothing new. And fake news can be dangerous. I think those are the two lessons to draw from that. But the other thing, and probably more interesting and more to the point, is years ago I was on the board of the Monterey Peninsula Water Management District, which was a kind of a big deal down there because water was short, and so the water district controlled, you had to get a permit from the water district to build a house. So the water district controlled how many people could live there. And so we had reporters come to our meetings, and when you are on a board like that, if you're being conscientious, it takes you a lot of work to figure out what's really going on. And reporters can't figure this out, just coming to a meeting and listening to what goes on. So I used to, I would read people's reports of the meeting, and then there were only a couple of reporters who covered it. I'd call them up and talk to them about it and try and explain what I thought was incorrect about what their reporting said, and not from the point of view of trying to get them to change it, but from the point of view of trying to get them to understand what actually was happening.
We reporters love members of the public who do that, by the way.
How they deal with the supervisors and the Harbor District and the other entities that they have to report on, and do you get any decent training from people on those boards?
You mean, do we get feedback from elected officials?
Yeah, useful feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. I have had good conversations with elected officials and public information officers from local government agencies, both on and off the record, about either a story I'm about to write or a story I have written. And I always appreciate when people call me up and respectfully systematically tell me if I had something incorrect or if I missed something. So that's very important.
Yeah. It's, sorry, go ahead, John.
No, I was saying good. Go ahead.
John, I'll put it to you like this, John. I'm sorry, I thought I got some feedback there. Am I okay?
You're good.
Okay. John, I usually run a second segment in my newscast that features a local elected official, local police chief, the sheriff, pretty much every day. So the interaction between our news and elected officials is pretty much a constant thing. And it's one of the things that I do, just doing short headline style news.
Absolutely. You know, it never feels good to be told that you got something wrong on a story, but I always find it useful when people give me feedback and tell me if I got something wrong. I know that occasionally when I'm taking notes, when I'm talking to somebody, I'll misspell, sometimes I'll misspell a name, sometimes I'll get a quote wrong, and it can be really humbling, especially when something goes into print that way. Did you have any other questions, John?
No, that's basically what I had to offer here. So carry on with your discussion, and I hope you can get into the issue of how to guide people about what on the web you can believe and what you can't, because there is a tremendous amount of good and accurate information there. But there's also a tremendous amount of fake news.
Thank you, John.
All right, well, carry on. Take care.
Thanks, John. So I think that he's absolutely right. The rule of thumb that I always use, because I have a lot of people on my Facebook feed that sometimes I gently coach towards more accurate news sources. And what I tell them, if they're curious about how to find more unbiased news sources, is don't trust anything that tells you exactly what you want to hear.
That's good, yeah. And maybe even don't trust yourself. I think a good critical reader is always questioning everything, including their own motives, which is hard for all of us to do. But
point, Brian, it was something I thought about when I'm thinking about what I'm going to talk about when Linda asked me a question tonight. And the way we consume media has changed so drastically in the last 15 to 20 years. It's only in my adult lifetime. You guys grew up with this. It was different. I was reading the New York Times and the LA Times in print every day, holding it in my hand, sitting at the coffee shop. And it's changed so dramatically that it's easy for me, with the way that I consume media, the way the things that I am interested in, that the next thing you know, look at my bookmarks. You know, you're not going to find a lot of National Review there.
Hmm.
So you have to be careful. That, again, that confirmation bias is something we all must deal with. And it's a much more varied landscape now. It's much more varied. Again, think of the voices that are heard now. Think of the voices that are gaining influence in this nation and across the internet internationally that you didn't find in the LA Times and the New York Times before. Different world.
Yeah, it's true. And I think, you know, to John's question about where you can go online, I think a good way to start is to do some research on your sources of news and then read the stories they're offering instead of following the headlines that you see come across your path. And, you know, there aren't a whole lot, you know, there's, for all the thousands of media outlets that are out there now, there really aren't a whole lot that are, you know, making enough and care enough to do actual investigative journalism. And so you can track down the ones that you trust. And a lot of those are still some of the legacy media outlets like the New York Times and, you know, the Washington Post that still have a physical product. There are some very esteemed and trustworthy online-only outlets as well. But, I think, you know, any outlet that you haven't heard of before, if you come across a news story and it's on a website that you've never seen by a reporter you've never heard of, you should be a little extra skeptical.
All caps are a bad sign.
I'm sorry, Linda.
I just wanted to say that all caps in a headline are usually a bad sign.
Well, but Ryan knows this firsthand, and this is a question I discussed with a friend of mine earlier. I consider Kim Kemp a reputable and reliable news source, one that I use pretty much all day, every day as a resource in Southern Humboldt. To me, that is an example of local. This doesn't have to be even investigative reporting, long form. This is just simple, everyday stuff. I called the local fire chief. I called the local police chief. I spoke with the local city council member. This is what they said. And this is what is happening in our community. And I think most of the folks listening to us right now and us three together would agree that's a reliable source of news for Southern Humboldt. And yet completely separated from anything that the normal processes that we see now.
Well, it's true, but I mean, you have to earn that reputation. And I think that Kim Kemp has, you know, many years of earning that reputation as a reliable and trustworthy source. Something that just pops up overnight may not deserve your loyalty right away.
Yeah,
and yet there's plenty of skepticism is still levied at Lost Coast Outpost, at North Coast Journal on their blog thing, at Kim Kemp and Redheaded Black Belt. A lot of skepticism is still there. Again, confirmation bias plays a part, but the same things that made us rely on traditional news sources are the same things that happen now. And Ryan made a good point, and John highlighted that. There's a lot out there to sift through. It's not easy to do that, and it's easy to be a little bit lazy about it.
Well, it's true, but we're also providing news for free to a great deal many people. And when you have an online medium, that it's much easier to have knee-jerk skepticism. Your audience is predisposed to approach it skeptically rather than someone who goes to a newsstand, spends $1.50 on a New York Times, doesn't like an article, and then what, writes a scathing letter to the editor? No. I mean, there may be plenty of people who are skeptical of print media and skeptical of traditional print media, but it's a lot harder to give your opinion on it than it is to, you know, leave a first TLDR comment on an article on Kim Kemp's blog.
Sure.
That's too long didn't read for people who aren't spending all day, every day online.
Yes, TLDR, too long didn't read, because we live in an age where it's appropriate to brag about how you have a very short attention span and didn't even read the thing you're criticizing.
Yeah, we get a lot of comments. People will just leave a series of Z's or type yawn, which... always amuses me that they, you know, they were bored by the story and yet had enough time to express that so everyone else could see.
Well, I mean, Ryan, you do write about a lot of boring things, like, I don't know, like renters' rights and school redistricting, and I'm falling asleep just thinking about them. Like, I don't understand why anyone would care or read about them, really.
It's, you know, it's an interesting thing working for an online outlet as opposed to, you know, when I worked at the Journal or the Times Standard, because the response is immediate and visible, and you can go look. You can publish a story and immediately go look and see how many people are reading it, and see how, you know, when they stop reading it. And it can be, I try not to look very often, because I don't think it's a very good influence. You know, there's a lot of hand-wringing about the state of media and the irresponsibility of journalists who, you know, focus on tawdry and meaningless stories, you know, the Kardashians, for example. And the fact of the matter is, people click on that. That's, mm-hmm. you know, we have ourselves to blame. That if you... You know, if I write, for example, a news story about renters' rights, or you know, a summary of the latest Board of Supervisors meeting, I can get depressed by going to look at our analytics and seeing that, you know, the latest weather post is, you know, kicking the... I can't say it on radio, but the fact is, part of the reason why news organizations are trending toward more sensational stories, especially in the digital age, is because that stuff can pay for real journalism. I would cite BuzzFeed as an example. It's 98%, 99% ridiculous and pointless and meaningless. But they have also founded an investigative journalism department that does real journalism, and so, you know, that's kind of the nature of the beast at this point. You have to mix the high-minded stuff with the stuff that people will actually click on and read, because otherwise the finances just don't pan out.
William Randolph Hearst understood that as brilliantly as anyone, and what Ryan just described, I think, is a scenario we've seen since the rise of mass media in this country, whether it was the 1890s and the advances of the technological and the Gilded Age, and then through the high times of the print age, and then all of a sudden we're online and we're dealing with the same issues. Why do people always go for the Hollywood, and why do they go to the style section? And this is real news, and we just reported on this. And we're in the same position, or at least those same tensions exist.
I think
how it's presented now is different, but it's the same thing. Why is Kim Kardashian getting more clicks than Jeff Sessions? And one of the reasons is that news is hard, and understanding the world around you and getting accurate information and being able to accurately interpret the world around you is hard. It takes work as well, and you're already doing another job. And so then we come along and say, no, that's not what it is. This is what the person said. And you're like, well, I don't know about that, Dan.
Well,
and that tension there, it's always there.
Not to mention most of the things we think are important are depressing and boring, and no one invites me to parties anymore. I just want to throw it out to our listeners that you can give us a call at 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. And you're listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. You can also text us at 492-KHSU. And my name is Linda Stansberry. Tonight we are talking about media literacy with Ryan Burns of the Lost Coast Outpost and Dan Squire of KINS. So doubling back to something you said earlier, Ryan, about how sensationalism can kind of propel various news outlets forward. You know, there are a lot of places like the BBC who are doing really important work. But they kind of spice that up with stories like the one I read to you guys earlier about clowns trying to lure people into the woods. I'm still mad about this. Like, but I understand why they put it out there, right?
Yeah, and I think that is an unfortunate example. I think you can do stories that people care about and that you might even label sensationalist, although I think sort of like fake news, that term by itself doesn't have a whole lot of meaning. But you can do stories that people will click on, and they don't have to be completely full of air or, have no impact on people's lives. We, you know, at the Outpost, we reported a lot about the local film production that was here, and that, you know, that hit on a lot of different levels because there's celebrity sightings, which is kind of, you know, one of the cheapest forms of reporting. But there's also, you know, when movie studios come and film in Humboldt County, it does have a legitimate impact on our economy, and it impacts traffic in some cases. And so people were clicking on those stories for all kinds of reasons, and we don't have to, you know, differentiate between highbrow and lowbrow. As long as we're reporting things that are relevant to people's lives and that they care about, and that they're factual, I don't think we have to apologize for any of it.
Factual is very important.
Tends to be.
But when I think about this, I wonder if articles like this in the BBC about clowns trying to lure children into the woods.
You're fixated on this clown story.
You're really starting to creep me out. Clowns are creepy enough. Clowns are creepy enough already, Stansberry.
I know. Well, it's a good thing that you're calling in instead of here in the studio, so I don't have to walk you to your car. Oh, we do have a call on the line. We have Cindy from Crescent City calling in. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Are you related to the famous Stansberry of NBR News?
No, I'm not.
Well, I was wondering if you and your two hosts there could comment on the fake news that the CIA has been putting out for the last 60 years.
Okay. I cannot. I can make this comment that what you just gave us was, there are clowns in the woods, and I can't make any kind of determination from that the CIA for the last 60 years has engaged in direct misinformation or disinformation and fake news. I can't do that because I can't see clowns.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about the fact that lies repeated often enough become reality?
I don't doubt that. I think that some people do tend to believe something if they've heard it more than once.
Mm-hmm. And that people will cooperate because they want to believe. And I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Cindy. So I want to ask you guys, do you ever have sources call you or come into your office or come to you with questions that you realize aren't really questions? Like they have stories that they'd really like you to cover, but there's no room for exploration there because they've already reached a decision about how they feel that the state of affairs is?
Oh, sure. Yeah, a lot of times people will want a story written. They've already composed it in their heads, and they just want you to, serve as their transcribe their story and put it into your outlet. But yeah, I mean, a lot of times that kind of lead, even though it's frustrating to hear from somebody who's got a very firm preconceived idea about what a story is, it can lead to an actual very interesting story, as long as you go out and find other sources.
I think so too, although that doesn't always go the way that they want it to go. I know that I did have a source come in at one time, or someone call us at one time and asked us to change a story that had been written 3 years prior that mentioned their arrest. And not having a degree in journalism, I didn't at first understand why my editors would be reluctant to do that. And I realize that I'm going off tangent here. Maybe you could explain a little bit why we don't go back in the past and change stories, Ryan.
Well, I'm sure it's different policies at different outlets, but we also have a policy of not deleting any stories. We will correct misinformation, but we don't, even though we're in a digital medium and it could be easy to wipe something clean from the digital record, we have a policy of not doing that. We will add information, but we usually won't take any away. So if somebody, we get those same calls, by the way, people who say, I was arrested, you guys reported this, it turns out all charges were dropped. We'll call up the district attorney's office, and if we can confirm the charges were dropped, we'll add that information. But we won't, for example, completely delete a post that we had written about the arrest, just as a matter of if you consider yourself part of the public record, which I think all of our outlets do to some extent, it's dishonest and a little bit sneaky to selectively delete anything that you've already put in print.
I tend to agree. And what ended up happening with this particular person who asked me to, or asked the journal to, erase their name from a story or edit the story post fact, is I offered to, I did what you suggested, is I looked into it and I read the arrest reports. And unfortunately, the arrest report was more compelling than the original story itself. It involved her being carried away from a protest and a fireman's hoist as she blew a party horn.
Wow.
And
it's a good image.
I know, and I couldn't not write about that after that. So I ended up doing a follow-up story mentioning the charges had been dropped, but then also describing the arrest. So I do feel bad, like it kind of backfired on her because I felt compelled to write about it, and so there's now two stories about it, about her arrest in our archives. But yeah, it was a good story.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, to deal with. I don't. JD Mathers made it. He asked me one time, we were talking sports radio a couple years back when I was still at the sports desk, and he said, "Dan, how do you deal when you misspell the headline?" I put something up. I think I misspelled Buccaneer. And he goes, "It's so easy for me. I make a mistake, I mispronounce someone's name, I get a date wrong, the score wrong, the time wrong, and it's into the ether, and it's gone, and we're back from commercial break, and I can look at that headline every day and see the misspelling." And I was like, "There's nothing you can do. There it is." Mm-hmm. And that's why being in a medium where once I say it, it's done, I don't have to deal with that.
That's true. Hey, we do have a call from Doug in McKinleyville. How you doing, Doug?
Doing well, guys. Appreciate this show. Just want to let you know that as a blind person, the computer's really opened up the news for me, and especially the Lost Coast Outpost. It's well done for my screen reader, and I like that it jumps me off to Kim Kemp or KINS, and then the stuff that Lost Coast covers. So I just wanted to applaud you guys for, I think we're really lucky here on the North Coast for all our local media.
Thanks, Doug.
I agree with him. I agree with Doug right there. We are lucky.
Yep. Since we're on the radio, you guys can't see that Ryan is giving a thumbs up. You also can't see his excellent man bun that he's been growing out for
months
now. Lies.
Fake news. I have no man bun. but yeah. I think Doug's right. We have a, you know, I don't know if it's because HSU is here, but we have a very engaged public, you know, community here. It might also be our geographic isolation. You know, we're pretty tight knit, and so it's not like we can turn to a metro area to deliver news. The San Francisco paper is largely irrelevant unless it's writing about, unless we're visiting the city for the weekend or reading about national or state news. So I feel really lucky to live in a place where not only do lots of people read the local news, but they also engage with it and have opinions about it. It's a fun place to be a reporter.
I agree. And we have a wide variety of different media sources here, too, from the radio station that we're on right now. I work for an all-weekly. We have a daily here. I guess it's not totally daily now. They skip Mondays, right? Time standard?
In print, yeah.
In print, right. Yeah. You work for an online platform. Dan works for a local radio station. Southern Humble alone has both Kim Kemp's blog, which is online, and then two newspapers, Redwood Times and the Redwood Independent. Like, I don't think you're going to see that in other areas, especially rural areas.
And KMUD, too. They do news, and then a wide variety of bloggers who are, you know, on anything from whether they lost their remote in their couch cushions to, you know, local politics. So it's there's a lot to read and listen to.
I get a lot out of the KMUD to cover Southern Humboldt, their news station, their news half hour.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of stations their size that produce news reports, so that's pretty impressive.
And how do you guys decide there's so much to cover? It must be a daunting task, or it would be for me to decide what to write about or broadcast.
Money.
I think
somewhere involved in stories that we're going to focus on, money plays a key issue. And that sounds simple, but whether it's financing for schools, whether it's financing for roads, whether it's law enforcement, money.
Oh, you're not talking about our salaries. I thought you were talking about our fast stacks there for a minute, Dan.
No. But money drives the narrative.
I think that's largely true. I also think that there are reporters locally who also, their radar goes up when they sense injustice, and they'll go after stories about discrimination or, I think, obviously, government malfeasance, which overlaps with money.
Can we interject there really quickly?
Yeah.
Can the Humboldt County Fair Board please raise their hand and say, okay, we've had enough?
We should have mentioned Caroline Titus at the Ferndale Enterprise because
can they just please don't say I have another?
Doug, I think we're going to have to let you go because we need to get some more calls. Thank you so much for calling.
Bye.
And again, those numbers are 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. You can also text 492-KHSU. And my name's Linda Stansberry. I'm talking with Ryan Burns of the Lost Coast Outpost and Dan Squire of KINS about local media and media literacy. How about we talk a little bit about the fair boards, as you mentioned it, Dan, and maybe also walk our listeners through the process of filling out CMPA or a CMPA, a PRA request. Sorry, CPRA.
CPRA, yeah, that's the California Public Records Act, which, as I mentioned earlier, allows anybody, not just journalists, to request public documents from their elected or appointed officials. So, you can just Google CPRA example, and you'll find templates that give you the suggested wording. But you don't even really need to follow that. any document that is part of the public record, any member of the public is entitled to that. And so whether it's, you know, your community services district board or the board of supervisors, you can ask for any document that was, you know, that led to a decision or that is on file in the, you know, in the government annals, and anybody's entitled to it. So if it piques your curiosity, or if you sense that something was hidden, you can ask for the documentation.
That's right. As a citizen of the great state of California, you're entitled to know what the government's doing with your money. I just want to let Jamie, who's on the line from Arcata, get a chance to chime in. Jamie, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm glad you're putting the show on. It's good stuff. I have a question about two local cases. I've been trying to follow up on them, and I haven't found anything. The first one has to do with a state bar investigation of Assistant County Counsel Blair Angus, and the other one has to do with the AG's investigation of child welfare services. Hmm. Any news on those?
I'm familiar with both of those. The Blair Angus involves a case of alleged elder abuse that was covered really well in the North Coast Journal. And you know, it's tough with investigations because those don't happen in public. So a lot of times, with personnel issues, you can ask all the questions you want, and they'll say it's confidential. I've inquired about the Blair Angus case, for example, and District Attorney Maggie Fleming just, you know, says she can't talk about it because it's a personnel issue, and that's the law. Yeah. It's not her being stubborn. So, you know, a lot of times we have to wait for the results of these kinds of investigations before we can really report on them.
Well, that makes sense. It's kind of frustrating to be waiting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But with the other one, the AG and CWS, I mean, I've got the pleadings. The last pleadings I can find are from way back in March.
Interesting.
So I'll keep looking, and maybe I'll let you guys know what I find.
Yeah, feel free to reach out to us. You know, we get tips from readers all the time, and there are people personally involved in a lot of these cases that are keeping better tabs on them than we do, because, as the last caller said, there's lots of stuff on our radar. So,
for sure.
Reach out
Great.
To us.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
I think it's important to note that most of us wish that we had an extra 10 hours per day, because there are a lot of stories we wish we could go into more depth with.
Yeah, and it's hard for you guys because, and, you know, when I was at the Time Standard and the North Coast Journal, you guys have a print product to churn out regularly, and so that kind of dictates your workflow. You know, you can really want to dig in on a story, but if your due date is approaching, you have to start making tough decisions.
You say churn, I say put together with care and dedication, but okay. You know, to each their own.
Potato, potato.
What about you, Dan? What's your turnaround like?
Mine is definitely on deadline. As soon as I get to work in the morning, and I get to work early, it's the same routine, checking emails, making sure I have all the information, stuff. Did I get a response from yesterday? Did I get a call back? Did I get a message? Maybe there's a quote. And then it's all deadline, and it's writing 6 to 8 stories, recording and editing them and getting them online. And it, as best as we can, we try to give depth in the fact that if we can have 8 stories, we can build on that throughout the day, and by the end of the day, we can have 12 or 13 stories as a total. So, but it's the when Ryan, you know, he sits down, Ryan's not going to go to work tomorrow and say, you know what, I've got to have that story done on the city council, and I got to have that College of the Redwoods story done. He's working on something else, and he'll stop and he'll do a press release and write up, and he'll talk to Withenbank or somebody at the sheriff's office, and there's an update on the blog because it's live news. They're going all the time. Mine is focused when I get in that on the edge, get my news out, get it written, get it recorded and edited, and ready for consumption. So it's a But then the rest of my day is very packed right up front. Then the rest of my day is asking all those questions, sending out those emails, making those phone calls.
Yeah, my editor warned me when I started this job that there were always going to be things that came up, stories that came up that I'd feel like they were undone when they went to print, you know, because you always want to do that last story, or that you want to contact that last source, you want to stick in that last anecdote, but sometimes it's just impossible. And also, I want to throw this in, like, we do try really hard to represent both sides of a story, but sometimes we do not get calls back from people representing the opposite side, or not the opposite side, but representing the other side of a story. Some people don't talk to us. We have hostile sources. I don't know about you guys.
No, everybody loves us.
Uh-huh. Yeah, your comment section attests to that.
yeah, it's true. I mean, but you have to...
Very.
What's that, Dan?
You guys are very popular.
Well, yeah, but we're very unpopular, too, with some folks. People, exactly. A lot of people love us, and a lot of people love to hate us. So.
But they know who you are. That's the important thing.
That's true.
That's true.
It's about that information, isn't it? If you can get them to listen, they will listen. They might look askance. But if you can catch that ear, if you can catch that eye, the next thing you know, and we're not just talking the trivial. You know, it's Lost Coast Outpost and the North Coast Journal and the Times Standard and the local blogs and the folks that are it's all part of that mass. You know, there's a lot there. There's a lot to take a bite of.
That's true.
Well, but everyone loves you guys, Lost Coast. Come on now.
That's demonstrably false, but I appreciate you saying
that's
so.
That's fake news. That's fake news.
Well, I have to say that I've really enjoyed talking with you guys. We do have to wrap up for the night, but thank you so much for joining me. And Dan Squire and Ryan Burns, I really appreciate both of the work that you guys, the work that both of you do. And it's been just a real pleasure getting to bend your ear and learn more about this field. So thank you again for joining me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you, Linda.
All right. Bye, Dan.
Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thank you to our host, Linda Stansberry, our guest, Ryan Burns and Dan Squire, and to our callers this evening. We love to get feedback on our programs. Please email Thursday Night Talk at khsu.org and like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Coming up next week on Thursday Night Talk, Professor Cesar G. Abarca of Centro del Pueblo will join Eric Kirk to discuss the activities of immigration customs enforcement on the North Coast and nationally and resistance to them, March 9th at 7. Thanks to KHSU Thursday Night Talk producer Geraldine Goldberg. Our theme music is composed and performed by Jeff Kreider. My name is Michael. I've been your studio engineer tonight. Just about 8 o'clock. Stay tuned to KHSU No Room for Squares is coming up next.
The BBC World Service can now be heard on KHSU BBC, 103.3 in McKinleyville and 90.1 in Ferndale. You can listen to news, documentaries, and analysis 24 hours a day on KHSU BBC. Details about BBC World Service programs and schedule can be found at khsu.org.
KHSU's community calendar airs 6 days a week during Morning Edition and the KHSU Magazine, and on Weekend Edition Saturday. To submit your nonprofit event in the calendar, use the online submission form at khsu.org or email calendar@khsu.org. Donors to KHSU include Maya Conrad, a full-service real estate professional with over 10 years' experience connecting people to place on the North Coast. Maya can assist with your real estate needs, including market analysis and property showings. She can be reached at mayatconrad.com. This is Diverse Public Radio from Humboldt State University, KHSU and KHSU HD 90.5 Arcata, KHSR 91.9 Crescent City, and KHSG 89.9 Garberville. The time is just about 8 o'clock.